Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
How you doing?
I'm doing okay. It's Friday. That's always a plus in my book.
It's always good when it's Friday, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, you can tell that we're both having very quiet Fridays in that we, you know, we're doing this podcast about 45 minutes after we both agreed, yeah, let's do it at this time. And then we're both like, oh, we need some time.
Yeah. It's true. I'm coming to you live from the face of the sun.
Yeah, I'm coming to you live from the dark side of the moon, I guess.
Oh, nice.
It's very, very chilly here.
Oh, boy. Yeah, it's September, and you know what that means. It's summer in the Bay Area.
I was going to say, it's September, so apparently maybe we've switched places?
That's what happens. That's how it works. You get the real summer, and then I get the weird summer at the end, and it's going to be really hot today. I have I've rolled out our air conditioner, and I've turned on some fans. And
see, I almost need to turn the heat on, so we really are in the opposite. As I was up at the... on vacation in upstate New York, and we talked last week. It was so cold a couple of the nights there, we actually turned the heat on in that house, which I could not remember doing in August in my memory, because last year I was there, and it was brutally hot during a round that maybe a week earlier or something, but, you know, not a huge time apart. But it was in, like, the 90s and humid, and I remember just sweltering on the porch there. And this year we were all, like, bundled up, and we turned the heat on, and, man, yeah, it's weird.
Yesterday morning, I actually felt cold when I was waking up, and I kind of like got under the covers a little bit more, and it was 48 degrees. As the low yesterday morning, and then went up to 99. So you know,
that is a bit of a swing.
Little bit. Anyway, weather. How does it work? I don't know.
No one knows.
Apple event happening.
So I hear. That's the word on the street.
That's the word on the street. And that street is whatever replaces Infinite Loop at Apple Park. I don't know what that is. What street is that? I don't even know.
Are there even streets into there? Are you like, I was reading that you have to like park and then like walk, hoof it over to the theater. I think Matthew Panzerino was tweeting about that.
They gave us instructions about where to go. It's go to the Apple Park Visitors Center, and then I guess we hoof it from there.
I just want you to know that, you know, I feel there's a good chance that we never see any of you ever again. So I just want you to know the site will be in good hands.
Thank you.
When
Take
you are
care
all
of it for me.
Liquefied, I don't really even know what's going to happen, but...
Oh,
whatever occurs there.
I'm looking at a map now of the site, which is really funny because I typed in 10600 North Tantau Avenue, Cupertino, California, and it pops in to this little building, and it looks like that's the, I mean, it says it's the Apple Park Visitor Center. So this is the thing that they're building that's for the general public to...
Sort of the company store, sort of.
Yeah, it's like the company store at Infinite Loop, which I imagine they'll keep there, too. I imagine they'll have things in both places. But it serves that purpose of, like, the public thing. And then it was zoomed in that it's just sort of like trees and the construction site a little bit. And this building that is in Apple Maps, anyway, is kind of under construction. But the lurking in the corner is this little curved thing in the corner, and it's this, and you keep zooming out, and it's this enormous ringed building.
I do appreciate, I'm looking at Apple Maps too right now, and if you get close enough in, you really do get that 3D look at all the buildings, including the Steve Jobs Theater, which is a little
It's the Tantau Avenue building. Yeah, it looks like that we will then walk. It's like a 10-minute walk or something, but that's where the parking is. And then we, at least it is as of a week from now. I mean, maybe not long term, but you know, they're still working on this stuff. And then we walk over to the Steve Jobs Theater. So that'll be that's going to be a new experience. I'm intrigued about the whole thing.
Yeah, it sounds very fancy.
It does sound fancy. I've only ever seen. I haven't been on the new Apple Park campus. I've only ever driven past the parking lots.
Yes, you and I drove, when we drove down to WWC, we drove past the parking
garages. Those two, because there's the two giant parking structures that are right on 280, which actually is part of the cleverness of the design, is Apple's taken the portion of the property that fronts the freeway and just slapped down two layers of parking garage as basically a blocker covered in solar panels.
And then smart.
And so then, you know, you presumably cuts down on the noise and the visual of the site from the freeway. So that's very interesting. Yeah, I'm looking at the 3D view here.
Yeah, me too. I got the, it's coming together.
It's pretty wild. Pretty wild stuff.
Indeed. Well, so that's a big event.
They're going to announce everything.
Yeah, all
the
stuff.
Yeah.
Well, and WWC was no slouch this week, so, or this year. So there was, you know, it's not like in the past, I felt like we've had years where it seems like nothing happens up until the September event.
Yeah.
Whereas this time they already sort of announced a whole bunch of stuff on the, you know, mostly the Mac, but also the iPad at WWDC. So I think we'll hear a little bit more about some of those things they didn't ship, right? Like the iMac Pro. You know, they might talk about that a little bit more.
Maybe I'm not confident that they're going to do anything about the Mac.
Yeah.
Other than say
maybe a mention.
Say High Sierra is coming out, and we have great new stuff like the iMac Pro that's coming out in the next few months, and then that's it.
Yeah, there's not really a lot left, I guess, to talk about for the iMac Pro. They've kind of already got the pricing.
And it sounds like it's not going to ship for another two plus months. So
right.
I think they will have ample opportunity to talk about it in the future if they want to. So it would seem like if I were looking at the slide deck, that would be the first thing to go. It would be like, do we even want to talk about the Mac? Or should we, you know, put out a press release or maybe one slide that just says, Hi, Sierra is also here. You're going to love it. It's got a lot of great stuff in it. And the iMac Pro is going to come out and it's going to be great. Bye.
Just like, that's the whole event right there.
That's as the credits are rolling at the end of the event, an announcer comes on and says also the iMac Pro is coming out.
Also the Mac Mini has been updated.
There are no credits at the end of the event, but I like to imagine as the musical artist is performing, a list of other announcements scrolls by on the screen.
Yeah, it's like when they give you those slides at WWDC with all the features on them that they didn't talk about.
Yeah,
they're gonna have one of those slides with all the stuff we didn't announce.
It's a little bit like when people die and they do the Oscars, you know, trivia
memoriam
reel. This is the additional features reel. So it's like, ladies and gentlemen, Fits in the Tantrums, everybody, and they start playing playing one of their little songs, and meanwhile scrolling by is sort of like, here's High Sierra's availability date, and here's some specs for the iMac Pro. And
do you think they also put up all the stuff that is dead that they're not updating?
Yeah, and then the screen goes black for a moment as the music continues to play, and then we see the iPod line, and we're reminded that it died this year.
And then the
iPod
line.
Mini appears, and everybody gets really sad because they're like, oh no.
We didn't know it died. This is breaking news.
Yeah, well, that's how they do it. That's how they're going to do it. They're going to do it during
Are you suggesting that at the Oscars they show you breaking news of people who have died that you didn't know about?
That totally happens every year, right? In the Oscars, don't you have that? Or are you so attuned to celebrity news that you don't see somebody on the in memoriam and go, oh no, I didn't know they died?
I just thought it would be super much weirder if they like panned over to someone who was in the audience, and then it turns out they're also in the in memoriam, and like that's how they find out they die. It's like, oh my god, Ed Harris.
That's one
and
place.
Ed Harris is like, wait, I'm right here.
that's one place that they have not soiled with a comedy bit yet. Is the in memoriam segment.
Only a matter of time.
Jimmy Kimmel ruins the in memoriam segment. Anyway, so yeah, it's going to be a new place for me to drive to, although it's like, for people who don't know Cupertino or the Bay Area, it's like a freeway exit down from Infinite Loop. Like, depending on, in Apple Maps, if you want to go in there and have some fun, turn it to satellite, turn it to 3D, you can get a view. Like, I'm looking now and it's like a view of Apple Park and over 280 to Infinite Loop. Like, it's not that far. It's probably like a half hour to walk it, but it's probably like 5 minutes to drive it. other than 15 minutes to get to your car and the 10 minutes to extract it from the parking lot and all of that, because Apple Park is enormous, but it's really not that far down. I live north of the Golden Gate Bridge, so it's a long drive for me. But in terms of like where it's related to the existing Apple stuff in Cupertino on De Anza and at Infinite Loop, it's right there. It's right there.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it. They did the RSVP a little different this time too. They actually used Apple Wallet. So you click on an RSVP and it says, "Are you coming?" The RSVP link doesn't just say, "Thank you for coming." It says, "Are you coming?" "Yes, I am coming." And then they say, "Hey, here's a passbook or Apple Wallet thing. Enjoy." So I got a barcode now for the Apple event, which is weird.
Very efficient.
Yeah. Yeah, they're putting systems in place. New location, new world. I was saying I was on Jim Dalrymple's podcast yesterday. I'm not sure when that's coming out. Hopefully soon. And we were talking about all this stuff. And one of the things that I was thinking about was how I'm looking for, I mean, everything's going to be new this time for them and for us. Whoever, puts on the group that puts on Apple events, and there is a group that does that. I know a little bit about that group. They work hard and they spend a lot of time putting it together. Not just not the people who are doing the slides and stuff, but like even the logistics of not just inviting people, but like setting up the venue. This is really interesting because it's their venue. And so unlike any Apple event other than the town hall events over the years, but unlike a large event like this, which is larger than Yerba Buena, let's say, right, that they can do in this venue, they control it. It's on their property. They built it for these events, right? So it's going to be really interesting to see, because this is a purpose-built structure. Apple is, other than maybe WWDC, where they've got a whole convention center, like Apple's not going to do those rental events anymore. They're just not. This is why they built this theater on their campus, is to do these events. And so that's going to be fascinating to see. And it'll be interesting to see how they use the facility over time. Like, I'm sure they'll use it for corporate stuff and training and whatever else, and company meetings and things.
That kind of stuff,
right?
Yeah.
But for public events, for these media events, I wonder, will it change the cadence of them? Will they do them more often? If they do a smaller event like the town hall events they used to do, what are those like? Do they still fill? Like, I'm not sure this is going to sound mean, and I don't mean it this way. When they do a 300-person event at Town Hall, like, there are more people who want to come than can come because it's such a small facility. But those events tend to be the ones that have less interest. It's like a Mac announcement. And Mac announcements, as much as we love the Mac, or even iPad announcements, they're not as big as an iPhone announcement. I found phone announcements are the biggest. So if they do a Mac announcement, do they do it at Steve Jobs Theater? I assume so. And then who comes? Do they just fill it? Do they fill the rooms? Like, whatever. Any media people who want to come can come, or do they cap it or what? I don't know how that's going to work.
I don't know. It's weird because you definitely feel like what they don't necessarily want is to have an event that has 300 people in a 1,000-seat theater and looks like it's really empty.
Although not packing the theater is not the end of the world. Then again, it's Apple, right? I mean, they could pack it with people in the media and VIPs and employees.
Yeah, sure.
It's not going to be a problem.
That's the thing, is you just buffer it with everybody else. I made a kind of snarky comment on the Rebound earlier this week that they would just, this is bigger than Yerba Buena, for example. And I was like, maybe they'll let more, maybe I'll get an invite because they'll like go lower down the list. And I think I said, or they'll just let more Apple employees in because they'll clap a lot louder than I will. So that's a possibility.
Yeah. For people who haven't experienced it, and it was especially true, I feel like, at the WWDC keynote, where WWDC keynote, it really felt like there was like they had practiced when to clap. because there were two totally different kinds of applause at WWDC. There was the organic applause where the crowd applauded, and then there was the applause that was very clearly from one section, that was the people from Apple who were applauding.
And yeah. That's always tricky, especially at media-only events, right? Because it's, at least at WWDC, you have developers in the audience who are truly often yes. very excited for what they can do.
And
whereas
media event... We're not supposed to applaud.
That's not a thing that you do.
Always know that. But yeah, we're not supposed to do that. We're there to cover it. We're not supposed to applaud.
Yeah.
And when I do applaud, it's either like a feature I really, really wanted.
Yes.
Or it's this idea of like something that's like when they do, let's hear it for all the people who worked really hard on this.
Oh, sure.
Like, yeah, for the rank and file.
Yeah, that's fine.
Or if it's like somebody who has an inspiring story or something like that, where you're like, yeah, that was very impressive.
Heck, if someone like walked on the stage and was like, just as like a politeness, be like, oh, it's Tim Cook. Yeah. Hey, Tim.
Sure.
How you doing? Like,
sure. But
that's just nice. But like, yeah, I'm not going to applaud for
there are these applause
Apple
lines.
Sold 100 million iPhones. It's good for you guys.
Yeah.
I'm not here to make you feel better about that.
I'm just going to write that down. But, yeah, so it's all new. It's all mysterious. Other than the fact that we're all going to be on deadline, and it's funny. I keep waiting for them to do a thing that is, let's show you around, like the and that may yet come. A like the press is invited to an open house at Apple Park, so that right. everybody can just like get it out of their system that the campus is open. But I suspect that won't happen this time because they're going to know that almost everybody there is going to need to immediately file stories and
right.
make videos and do podcasts and things like that and run away. So maybe that'll come down the road sometime. If not, I'm going to just have to wheedle an invite to Apple Park sometime because I'm
sure.
very curious about
it. Oh, yeah, I would love to get over there. And I do know
like.
A few people who still work there, I think. But yeah, it's
I know people who work at Apple. The question is when and if will they be, if they move into
They'll
Apple
be there.
Park.
That's right.
that's the question. Like some of them I was talking to somebody in the podcast group and I think they may be moving to Infinite Loop. I think they may be the recipients of the because that's Eddie Q's group and I think that's all they're trying to the rumor was that they're trying to put all of the Eddie Q services people together in Infinite Loop, which means they have to move everybody out of Infinite Loop and in who's moving into Apple Park.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I've said this before, but I'll mention it again too. There is a perception out there that probably our listeners don't have because they've heard me say it or we've written about it. But like Apple Park is big, but Apple has way more employees in Silicon Valley than could fit in Apple Park. Apple's going to fill Apple Park and still have Infinite Loop full
right.
and still have many, many other office buildings in Cupertino full of people. And I don't think they're doing a massive expansion of their hiring. So I think what really is happening is some of the maybe lesser buildings and far out buildings are going to go away. And then maybe also they've got some places where they're really pressed for space where they may open it up a little bit and have some more breathing room. But there is still a public perception like all of Apple is moving into the ring, and that's totally not happening. That's
only the chosen.
Yeah, I do have there is that moment of like when I talk to people at Apple, they're like, I'll believe it when we move. Like they told us that we're going to move and we're supposed to pack on a certain date maybe, but like I won't believe it till we're there. And I think that's a good philosophy.
The ring chooses.
Yes. It is my precious.
Yes.
So new iPhone stuff is going to happen. I'm still interested in the details. Sound like a broken record, but when people say, oh, well, we know everything, the mystery is gone. It's like, we know the specs, but like how Apple pitches this and what the software is and how they promote this thing.
The software thing.
And the price and the names, it's all open.
It's part of a message, a story, right?
Yeah.
There's a big question here about, there's always something I feel like software specific to a new model of phone that you can't get just from looking at the specs. And then you'll look back afterwards and be like, oh, yes, obviously that makes so much sense. But most of the time, I feel like people don't have all the pieces beforehand to look at it and say, this is the whole picture.
I had this with when I was talking to Jim Dalrymple that one of those moments for me, and I'm not saying that this is actually the case, but it may be, is there's all this talk about face unlock,
mm-hmm.
and this question about how it'll work. My shorthand version of this is basically, if you're Apple and you are doing what I think Apple does with product design, which is think about like, what's the ideal? Like, not, let's not think about the details. This is that classic thing of like, what do you want? When a client says, I want the text to be blue on this page, and you're a designer, a web designer, let's say, you don't say, what you push back and you say, look, it's my job to decide what color the text is. What are you trying to say to me? And it's like, well, I don't think that the links stand out enough. It's like, good, I'll go and I'll take that away. So for product design, I assume somebody at Apple is saying, like, look, let's not talk about fingerprint readers and laser, infrared scan, 3D face detection, whatever. Let's leave that aside for a moment. What should a phone do when you pick it up? And the answer is, it should know it's you.
Yeah.
And if it's not you, it should know it's not you. And if it is you, you should just be able to use it. That, right, that's the ideal. Is like, if I pick up my phone and it's me, it should be like, oh, it's Jason. Do whatever. And if you pick up my phone, it's going to be like, nope, you're not Jason. You don't get to do anything. And that's like, that's how it should be. And the tech should enable that feature. So my moment of realization was, I was thinking about the lift to wake feature that came in. What was that, last year or 2 years ago? Is it just on the 7?
I think it may be backported in iOS 11. I thought I saw somebody else mentioning it was on 6S or something.
In iOS 10, it went to the 6S, maybe? I don't know. Forgive me.
I don't know exactly.
Somebody out there
but
listening to this knows the direct answer. But my point is, the raise to wake feature, where you pick up your phone and it lights up. It's still locked, but it lights up.
I think I see where you're going
right?
with this.
I started to think, oh my God, that is a feature you would want if you're building toward having this auto unlock stuff, right? Because now that you can, if this new phone does face unlock, however they want to handle it, like, you lift the phone, it's unlocked, right? That's the whole thing. It's completely invisible.
Right.
And that was one of those moments where, and you said you can, this happens a lot, and it's usually after the fact, you look back and you're like, oh, you know, I bet that was part of a bigger long-term drive to completely change how unlocking on iPhone works. And it took years, and those features rolled out in little bits, and they didn't always connect right away. But now I can see, looking back, and the race to wake is one of those, like, I see where they're going there. Because it makes way more sense to have it race to wake and have it be auto-unlocked by your face than it does to have to still touch your finger to the sensor.
Right, and on the converse side, if you have somebody else pick up your phone, the idea that depending how good the face, like how fast the face recognition thing is, could not even turn the screen on, right? Like, could essentially make it so that if somebody else picks up your phone,
yeah, maybe,
not only can they not unlock it, but maybe they just can't even see anything on there.
And if you look at the effects that they added, like in iOS 11, they added an effect where when it wakes up, it fades in from the bottom, like it's sort of lighting up, and the light is slowly reaching the top of the screen from the bottom, which is really interesting too. And that's the same thing, right? Like, I feel like what's happening there is it's giving you the impression that it's opening. And that's useful if you're doing a face unlock where there's a little bit of a delay while it's sensing you. So if you pick it up, it's starting to scan you, but you know, you're seeing it light up, and your eyes are now focused on the screen. And by the time you do that, it's already unlocked the phone, right? But it gives you that sense of instantaneous action based on the sensors knowing that somebody's picking it up. And, you know, but your brain interprets that it's unlocked, because by the time you are ready to look at the phone, it now has done your face unlock and unlocked the phone, and it's ready to go. So if you tap on anything in Notification Center, it'll just open and you don't have to worry about it, which is, well, you know, that's great.
And there's a handful of little changes in iOS 11 that also suggest some different, like, so for example, little details like the lock screen slides up now when you open it, like the animation is of it sliding up. Which made me wonder, because all the discussion about the, you know, no home button on the new iPhone, and if you have to, like, you swipe up from the bottom to unlock instead, perhaps. So that's a possibility. There's the, you know, the whole overlay. Now, when you open a notification, it puts like a overlay over the entire screen,
right,
that says use Touch ID, which makes me wonder again. I think Touch ID and whatever this facial unlock thing will be sort of part of the same, you know, call it authentication kit or whatever, right? Like, different ways to accomplish the same thing. So it makes you wonder, like, okay, like you said, if you're looking at the screen, you tap a notification, does it automatically open? What does it show you there? So, you know, sometimes you can take away these little hints. As you said, you see the little pieces, but you haven't seen how it all ties together yet. So I think there is a story left to tell there. And I think the facial unlock thing certainly seems to be something about that seems to be the big, you know, the big marquee feature of this device, but I don't think we have the entire picture yet.
Well, and the virtual controls, Mark Gurman did a story this week about with some details from which he doesn't get the software details as much, but he's talked to somebody who's seen it, who claims to have seen like iOS 11 running on this new phone, or at least a version of this new phone. And it sounds like since there are no controls on the front, right, there's a lot of like new gestures. This is the new paradigm for Apple, getting away from the physical buttons. War on buttons continues, by the way, if you were wondering. Everything will be zippers. But a lot of the things he describes in terms of like swiping up to unlock and swiping to go back to the home screen and stuff like that, there's a function area at the bottom of the screen. The other thing that it reminded me of is the iPad interactions in iOS 11.
Yes.
It's very clear that if these rumors are true, that what Apple has done is Apple is introducing a whole bunch of different user interface language for iOS, and it reveals itself in different ways depending on what device you're on, but that they're all related and consistent. And so when he starts to describe these swipes and other gestures that you do to get around on the new iPhone, it sounds so much like how you get around on the iPad. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I think it's all part of a whole. And so now you look at the iPad interactions in iOS 11, and you wonder, why are they doing the swipe from the bottom gesture?
Yep.
That's kind of weird. It's like, well, it's because it's the same gesture as the new iPhone.
Right.
That's it. And it probably means that they could do an iPad without a button too.
Yes,
if they want
probably
to.
Will.
And probably will, because if the entire OS is no longer predicated on the idea that you need a button to do, you know, to move to the home screen or to move around, and that's where they seem to be going, right? Then the next iPads may just drop that feature as well, because once you've got the gestures, you don't necessarily need it.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a little bit about this week, but this idea, you know, I thought for years there have been rumors about them getting rid of the home button eventually, or doing stuff to the home button.
And I think they've been working on it for years, right?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think
I agree.
Just idle speculation. I think this is a long gestating project.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be, because this is such an integral part as from day one, right? Like, essentially, the home button, despite sort of undergoing small changes, whether it be Touch ID or whether like on the 7, where it's not even really a physical button anymore.
Right.
Like, they've been trying to get away from it, but it's still remained largely the same. It's been a safety net. You know, you always know you can press the home button and you will go back to the home screen. And I think that has been really huge in getting people comfortable with smartphones as it became such a big part of our lives, right? It made it easier in a way that, like, you know, the idea of control alt delete or something on Windows is kind of like the equivalent I think of, is like, oh, what's the thing you need in case you get into trouble? But for smartphones, it's always just been you can press that button at the bottom. But 10 years in, I feel like most people are actually pretty darn comfortable with their smartphones now. You don't need that sort of safety net in the way that I think you did probably in the first several years that you were getting used to this new paradigm. But it's just become not only just like, oh, it's a thing a lot of people have, it's just become such a predominant way that so many people interact that it has become like a second language, in the sense of, you know, think even about like touch typing on a screen, right? Like, how much was poo-pooed about the idea of an on-screen keyboard in the early days, right? That won't work. Yeah, you know, that seems ridiculous. Everyone knows if you want to do anything seriously, you have hardware keyboards. But how many people these days probably spend way more time on an on-screen keyboard than with a physical keyboard? Probably a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so the idea that you can just acclimate to that over time and thus drop sort of those old legacy carryovers that were, you know, intended to soften the landing, I think makes a lot of sense. And 10 years in, it's, I mean, I don't think they necessarily spec'd out like 10 years in, we're going to drop the home button, right? But like, if it happened to coincide, it seems a very convenient milestone to be like, all right, we're moving on to this next stage of smartphone development. And it's a huge deal for them, right? Not only does it let them build in way more screen space, but like, you see how much they enjoy taking out things where it's like, we don't need this thing anymore, and it frees up a ton of space. The headphone jack, for example, same idea, right? I feel like so much of the last couple of years, and I think a few years going forward from now, are going to be about actually really getting rid of the things that are superfluous now that we are all very comfortable using smartphones.
Yeah, I was thinking of like, look at a person using an iPad, let's say. Because I think the iPad, using iOS 11 maybe in the iPad, but look at a person using an iPad. Don't talk to them and don't see what they're doing. Just watch their physical interaction. And because I was thinking about like when I use an iPad and I'm really kind of like focused. And what you'll see is hands on screen, hands on screen, hands on screen almost mm-hmm. entirely. And then all of a sudden they'll go bloop and they push a button. Hands on screen, hands on screen, hands on screen, hands on screen. Bloop. And they push a button. If you think of it like in that context of like how do we use our iPads, just as an example, that button's ridiculous. Like the button is there, like you said, it's like a lifeboat in case of dire emergency. How do I get out of this? Well, there's a physical button to press. But like everything else we do to interact with our iPads is based on touching the screen. I mean, the physical buttons, like to put it to sleep, to wake it up, to do Touch ID, to unlock it, and change the volume, right? Those things happen too, but those are kind of like, I don't know, those are a little more meta. Most of the time, I'm not adjusting the volume. It does happen occasionally, and I can do those from, I can do that from the screen too, right? Yeah. It's just like, you know, if you think of it as, of course, the button is great because it is a fallback and it's a shortcut and I can triple click on it to kick off an accessibility thing. And there's lots of nice things about having a button, but I can totally see the perspective that it's not necessary if the operating system evolves to make it unnecessary. And that's what's happening. There's no doubt about it. Like if the top of the line of the most important product that Apple makes is getting rid of the home button, I will tell you the home button is not long for this world. Maybe,
oh, sure.
You know, maybe a year or two or four or five for it to completely go away. But it's hard to see how the home button survives if Apple is taking it off of their top of the line iPhone.
No, that stuff trickles down, right? Yeah. I mean, I think all of that
That's a global philosophy on Apple's part, that iOS devices don't need a home button anymore.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that is the way that we're going. And it just makes so much sense from their perspective and largely from user perspectives as well. I think you're spot on with the idea of like, they've been trying for years to make gestures a thing on the iPad, right? The multi-touch gestures have been in there, the multitasking ones, basically since around the time multitasking started, right? Like when you could three-finger swipe left or right to switch apps and stuff like that. It never was something that they really pushed hard on. It was always something that was in there.
Yeah.
It's not discoverable, and it's not something that I think even they were like really... Most of that was like holdover from Mac, right? Like the Mac gestures on the trackpad. Like, you know, being able to like use all your fingers to close apps or expose on the Mac, etc.
Right.
Like, I felt like they were trying to experiment with it, right? Does this work? Does this make sense? We're going to put it in there. We're going to see if people use it. We're going to see if it makes sense. We think it makes sense. And I think their answer was, no, that particular implementation of it does not quite jibe. But yes, the idea that you should be able to pretty much entirely use your iOS device interacting with what is on screen is something that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Like you said, jumping back to the button all the time is kind of odd.
And you throw in the iOS 11 dock, which if people haven't used iOS 11 yet, I mean, one of the things that's a real game changer, but you gotta wrap your mind around it, is you flip up from the bottom of the screen and the apps in the dock appear. And you can just switch. And on the right side, it's got basically your three most recent apps. There's some intelligence there, but basically it's the three most recent apps on the iPad. Now that's an app switcher with gestures, so you don't have to hit the button. You don't have to do a multi-finger gesture. You just flip up and then tap. On the iPad, if you flip it up a little bit further, you get the multitasking thing, which is used to be the, you know, you got to click the button a couple of times to get it up. But now you just flick and that happens. So, you know, it's already in 11 really easy to move around the system without clicking the button. And then if the rumors are true, this new iPhone introduces this other concept, which is some sort of function area at the bottom of the screen that solves a lot of your discoverability issues, because you have the place to see that there are things you can do down there and you can drag that thing around or tap or whatever. And I would imagine that may be something that we also start to see on other devices at some point down the road.
I kind of don't even want a home screen anymore. I just thinking about this as we talked about, I was like, man, with everything in your dock, you know, it doesn't have room for everything, but so little of the time do I spend flipping through screens of apps trying to find the app I want anymore.
I throw everything in folders and just search now.
And use Spotlight, exactly. And
unless
so,
it's on my home screen or in my dock, yeah, basically.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, I guess I was thinking about it compared to a Mac, right? Where it's like on a Mac, you have a dock, you put your most commonly used applications in the dock. Your default is your desktop, right? Not, it's not app oriented, it's file oriented.
Right.
And I don't think they necessarily would go in the file oriented direction on iOS, but I do think that there's an argument that maybe there is some other interface that is the default quote unquote interface that is more useful, because I do feel like now that I've got the ability to adjust my dock much more, I don't want to spend as much time on the home screen. Like, there's nothing for me to do there other than launch apps. And if I can do that via the dock or via Spotlight, if there were a slightly better way of doing that with Spotlight in like the multitasking interface, I don't know. Maybe this is setting the stage for a home screen rethink a couple years down the road, because you're going to not spend as much time paging through. I mean, I still think on the iPhone, especially, I have like 150 apps on the iPhone. I don't spend any of this time, like, I hate paging through, you know, screens of apps, even with like tons of stuff in folders. It just seems very cumbersome to me still.
I don't think we're saying, oh, well, the home screen is going to go away. But I think that you're right about thinking of it as de-emphasizing the home screen as the be-all, end-all of accessing apps, and making it more like, well, you can go to a list of apps if you really want to, but there are better ways of,
right,
of doing that. And on the iPhone, you know, like on the iPad, Spotlight is great. On the iPhone, it's a little bit harder because, you know, it's a phone, it's a smaller screen, typing is not necessarily as easy and all of that. But there are lots of different ways. It's just fascinating to see, right, that there is obviously some big picture philosophy stuff that Apple has for where iOS is going, and it gets revealed in little bits, and it tickles me to see a report like Gurman's, because what it does is show, it's reporting about brand new stuff never before reported on, but what it's doing is reinforcing directions Apple's already been going and they've been showing. I do feel for the like UX designer who has everybody talking about the weird choices to have the swipe up in iOS 11 on the iPad, and they're sitting there going, can't talk about the other part of this, which is the new iPhone, which is like part of the same big picture. So it's, I'm looking forward to getting that. And this is one topic, and we spent like 20 minutes talking about it in this, oh, well, we know everything already, it's going to be really boring. It's like, we don't, like, if all you want to know is, like, there's a new iPhone, guess what? I'd like to break this news now. In September of 2018, there'll be a new iPhone 2. Okay, I guess I've spoiled everything now. And there's some details that make this new iPhone really interesting, because it's a very different device than we've seen before. But, you know, all the details are really what matter. The details are going to affect everybody's interaction with that product and all of the other products that Apple makes over time. That's where it gets really interesting, is Apple. How does Apple describe stuff? Even if it's marketing and you think that some of it is BS, it's still relevant, because it's what Apple believes, or what Apple wants you to believe, or what Apple, how Apple has chosen to sell that product. That is all super interesting and relevant to understanding what the product is or is supposed to be, or how it's supposed to be marketed. And then, of course, we all get to walk away and form our own actual opinions about the real thing. But hearing how Apple sells this stuff and explains why they're doing what they're doing, boy, that is incredibly interesting stuff. And we only get, you know, if you think about it, we only get a few hours of that every year, and then we spend the rest of the time parsing
the tea leaves.
There's
a lot of tea leaves.
You drink a cup of tea 4 times a year, and the rest of the time you're just looking at the leaves.
I would literally not survive if I only got 4 cups of tea a year.
I'm with you there. So I wrote about this in the Six Colors magazine, which came out this week. We bought a vacuum thermos, Zojirushi, recommended by Wirecutter.
I bought one for my girlfriend a couple years ago.
I haven't had a good thermos since I've been drinking hot beverages, basically.
I have a really nice one that is not that one, but I bought several years ago, but it is amazingly good at keeping stuff hot.
Yeah, I have some car mugs and stuff, which I rarely use either, but they're not...
This was a serious thermos, like, double-walled...
This thing is amazing. Like, you pour boiling water into it, and it's cool to the touch. You can't even tell that it's warm There's warm stuff inside?
The story I always tell about the thermos I have, which I still use, is I poured myself, you know, I put a tea bag in, I poured hot water, you know, boiling water right off the boil, and I then hopped in the car and I drove to visit Tony Sindelar, and this was back when he used to live about an hour and a half from my house. And I got off the freeway, you know, an hour and 15 minutes later, and my tea was almost cool enough to drink, but not quite. After like an hour of sitting in this thermos, it had basically lost, you know, a tiny percentage of its temperature. And I was like, this thermos may actually be too good.
Yeah, it's, right. If it's too hot to drink, for example, then, you know, it's going to be too hot to drink forever. And that's not,
that's not ideal.
But we had that, so I bought it, and the idea was to take tea with us in the car. And it was awesome. Like, it's just a fun little gadget thing that I've never had to experience, because I was never really a big car commuter. I did some driving, but it's been a long time since I was a regular car commuter. I was a public transport commuter for most of, you know, the last 20 years. And, but it was pretty awesome, because I made some tea. We had breakfast in the motel in Nevada, nowhere Nevada, basically, before our last day coming home. And then I just asked the lady if she could fill up the thermos with hot water, which she did. And I made some tea in the thermos. And then like an hour on the road, you know, Lauren and I just drank the tea, and it was hot. And I had that moment of like, oh yeah, this is the thing about drinking tea or coffee or any hot beverage is, you know, right, fresh when it's hot, it's great. But even if you just like are leisurely and let it sit there for 5 or 10 minutes, it's not hot anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed your tea comments, and the issue I've run into, and this has happened on a bunch of my recent travels, is I go to a lot of places where there are not tea drinkers. And so I have started, at some point I threw a ton of tea bags, just of random varieties, into my backpack that goes with me whenever I travel.
Yeah.
And it's actually been, that has been such a huge improvement.
You got to do it. We have a Ziploc bag full of tea bags that we bring with us.
And it's just, because I went to Finland and there was tea there, but it was not like super as prominent, I felt. And then I was down at my girlfriend's friend's beach house, and they are all coffee drinkers and there are no tea drinkers. So
I know.
I was like, I had to get up every morning, boil my water, get my tea bag out. Mm-hmm. So it's,
you know, where you visit where that's not a problem?
Your house. There are many, there's a drawer, I feel like, right?
There's a drawer full of tea. Absolutely. Yeah, and we got some coffee stuff somewhere that we leave for the coffee people to figure out themselves, because we don't know how to use it.
Yeah, my cousin's house is similar. They are also coffee drinkers, but they are also tea drinkers, also have a nice drawer full of tea.
Tea is just a pain in the butt, because, you know, you've got, as I said in the magazine piece as an aside, but like, it's a pain in the butt because you got to like put it in and then you got to take the tea back out or it's all bitter and bad.
That is the trick.
And it's so that makes it like fundamentally it's super fussy and annoying. And it's not fussy because people who drink it are fussy. It's fussy because it has stupid requirements of how to make it that are really annoying. Because somebody serves you a little pot with tea in it, and it's like, this is great. Where do I put the tea when it's been 3 minutes?
If you go to a good place, they give you a little like tray or a little like dish almost to put stuff in, which I have run into. But it is worse when you go to we'll stop and get coffee on the coffee and tea on the, you know, throughway. And it's like, all right, either I stand around for like 3 or 4 minutes and then dump the tea bag before getting in the car, or we better have something in the car that we can put a hot mass of tea back into, because that is going to be a mess otherwise.
At Starbucks, my experience has been that more often than not, I get, and for those people who ask, because we actually do hear from people who say, why don't you talk about tea more? Because they want to, troll
it's
everybody
over,
else.
It's over on the tea cast.
A lot of times at Starbucks, more often than not, I think, when I get tea, it's in 2 cups.
Yes.
And I think it's implied that you take one cup out of the other and put the bag in it. And that's how you save yourself.
I think that would be ideal. I think the real reason they do that is because the superheated water is so hot.
I don't know how they get the water that hot. Shouldn't it just turn right into gas? It is ridiculously hot.
But there is a thing called superheated water, and I'm not sure how that works.
You touch it and it explodes in your face and burns you and you die. That's basically how that
sounds
works.
Convenient.
But
yeah, that also I firmly believe
but it works,
that
right?
Makes...
It works 2 cups for tea. And it may be that they just have a policy, use 2 cups for tea.
I think that is the answer.
But as
yes,
a tea drinker, you're like, aha, this gives me some place to put the tea bag. Like, yeah, we did it, everybody.
That is the key. I actually like that in the coffee shop down near me, they've taken to brewing the tea for you and then giving you the cup after it's done. So you have to wait longer to get it. But once you get it, they've already removed the tea part of it, so you just get a hot cup of tea, which is inconvenient up front, but in the long run is actually beneficial.
Yeah, that's true. The tea place I went to in Chicago that Jackie Chang from ours now at the Wirecutter.
Argo Tea?
Yeah,
I've been there.
She showed me that, and that's cool because they've got like five teas that are like on draft, basically.
Oh, yeah.
They're ready to go and they're piping hot. And because I was talking to Lauren about this, because there's a friend of ours who was thinking about like making a tea cafe. And then they did the math and they realized tea cafes don't work because you have to wait.
Yeah.
Like if you're just running in to get a cup of coffee and leaving, you can do that, but you can't run in and get a cup of tea because unless
you have brewed it ahead of time, as you said.
And this is the thing. So at Argo, they had you could order any of these like 50 teas they had and wait 4 minutes for it to be done. Either they would give it to you after it was brewed, or they would just give it to you and you'd take the bag out. Or they had like 5 brews that were hot and ready to go, and I was like, oh, that's cool. Like when I went to Ireland, it was the same thing. They just came around with coffee and tea and they asked which one you want, and it's like, it's already brewed and it's awesome.
If you ever take the planes to Europe, they always have coffee and tea already brewed, in my experience.
It's pretty awesome. So
I think you're right though, because the whole point, like, I mean, people wait for stuff, right? Like if you order a really complicated drink at Starbucks that's got coffee in it, you're still gonna wait 4 or 5 minutes anyway. So
Yeah, I don't know. It's funny, but that was a gadget. That was a fun gadget, and I'm thinking now of making sure that if I need to keep my tea hot for a while, that I integrate that more in my life now that I have it. But it was a pretty great gadget to bring.
And I used
and
to.
We did actually on the day that we went camping. What I did was the day before I made tea in the thermos before we left to go to Idaho, and that meant that on the Monday morning, Lauren and I got to drink. You know, it was warm, I would say, not hot, but it also wasn't cold. And we got to drink some tea in the morning when we had no cooking anything around.
Yes.
And that was kind of cool, too.
We also camped for a night, and we had to then go drive down to the coffee shop in town instead. But that was fine.
How was Finland? I wanted to ask you that, too.
Finland was cool. It was not a place that I had ever necessarily said, I should go to Finland. But it was a lot of fun. I went to Worldcon. I had the interesting experience of so I was on a panel at Worldcon. It was about how to destroy the world with science. It was actually a lot of fun. I was a little anxious about it because I'm not a scientist. But it ended up being a really entertaining panel. I had some really great fellow panelists on that, and we had a good time with it, including our room was packed. It was full. They did not let anyone else in. There were people waiting outside who got turned away. And this was my experience with not just our panel, but a lot of the panels at Worldcon. I felt like, I think I saw their attendance numbers later. It was something like 7,000 or something. It was much higher than anyone had anticipated. So our panel was very good, and we had just enough room at the end where there was one seat left, and my moderator basically said, like, oh, someone can come in, and then he made that person sit at front and become a panelist with us. And actually, that person, a woman, was very good sport, and it turned out she was a physicist. So it ended up being a really, really useful sort of funny happenstance there. But that was really nice. We had a fun time with that. I did not end up going to any other panels other than the one I was on. I just ended up being too busy. And so it was kind of fun to get a chance to both go to the con and to wander around Helsinki a bunch, which we also did. So that was a fun experience. I'm kind of excited that so they alternate every other year is outside the U.S., so next year, Worldcon is in the very lovely town of San Jose. So I'll get probably 2 trips to San Jose next year.
Probably
within a couple
months. Isn't that funny? But we're gonna I think we're gonna try to do an incomparable. We'll do a relay gathering at WWDC and do an incomparable gathering at Worldcon. I think
that will be delightful.
That's the
and
plan.
Then 2 years from now, I believe they have downvoted and it will be in Dublin.
Awesome.
So, and I've been to Dublin and I enjoy it quite
a bit.
So I will.
Many times.
And plus, it's much closer to where I live.
It's very close to you. It's very close to you. I think it's as close to you as I am.
Yes, basically, roughly the same amount of transit time.
Yep.
So I'm looking forward to those. So that was a lot of fun. Finland was great. Definitely enjoyed. I would love to go back to some of the other countries in that region I didn't get a chance to go to, like I didn't get to go to Sweden or Norway or Denmark or really anything else. Iceland I stopped at on the way over, but I had like an hour layover each time, so I could kind of see it outside the airport, but that was about it. So lots of cool places to visit next time I go back to that region.
Yeah, totally. Travel. All right, well, it's still not quite 100 degrees here, but it's very, very close now, so I better go before I melt.
Yeah, don't do that.
But thanks to everybody out there for subscribing to Six Colors. If you're not in the member Slack, you should do that. Memberslack.sixcolors.com, I think, to sign up and get a login. And the newsletter came out this week, so check that out. There's fun stuff in there. And we'll be writing more in September. September, big month. Big month, high season for Apple stuff, which is great. So lots to talk about, lots to chew on. iOS will presumably come out, macOS will presumably come out, and then all that hardware. So great stuff to talk about.
Didi.
Yeah. All right. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.